Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, you know, mixing a drink, it's not a simple process. It's not for the faint of heart, mind you. It involves a lot of exact science and a lot of patience, but it's a fascinating topic with a lot of history behind it, and we are here to delve into it on a Food Friday. John Fisher is here. He's a professor of hospitality and service management at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. Previously, he was general manager at the Morel Wine Bar and Cafe in New York and has extensive industry experience. Gable Erenzo, I'll say it properly, was one of the fine minds behind the Tuttle Hill Town Spirits Distillery in Gardner, New York. He has since left to start his own project, which we'll talk about. He earned the distinguished title of American Whiskey Ambassador of the Year from Whiskey Magazine in 2013. Do we have to wear like a fez or something? If you have a question for the guys about distilling spirits, mixing drinks, cider, whatever, number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We have a celebrity taster in the house. I don't like to drink and drive a show. So I thought, who better to have on the program than my buddy Joe Donahue? Johnny, you know, you really jumped at the chance this morning at about 6:30.
You texted me very early, and I, at that moment, we were having the discussion at home of, will my wife take the car? Will I take the car today? Who needed it?
Right.
And my wife said, you know, I should probably take the car. And I said, well,
perfect.
That frees me up completely. I have a driver.
It really worked out. Now, John Fisher is the guy who gave me advice about martinis. You know, I like a martini now and again.
I've heard that.
So and again.
And again and again. And so I shake the martini. He said, oh, no, don't do that. You bruise the gin.
Well, I don't use that line. But it's you aerate it, and you also potentially make it more diluted.
Yeah.
By shaking it with ice.
Now, I must say, I've never taken your advice. I still shake it. And there's a reason for that. In my house, and I told you this, my household.
Expediency.
It's got to be fast. You got to make that martini. It's got to be cold. It's got to be fast before the next disaster in the house. And so that's why I do it. But I must say, I do like it shaken.
There's nothing wrong with shaking it if that's the way you like it.
But interestingly, and we'll get into this later, you talked about the quality of ice being important.
And people forget that ice is an ingredient.
And I'm fascinated by that. You have a list of things, important things, four important things when making a drink. And you put it in front of me. Ingredients, equipment, recipes, and imagination. And we'll touch on all of those in a moment. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Gable Erenzo, so you're an ambassador. What did you have to do as a whiskey ambassador?
I mean, it sounds like the dream job.
Yeah, you go foreign lands and have a couple cocktails?
Foreign lands nationally, yes.
Okay.
My father does the international brand ambassador work. But I do education for bartenders and restaurants about our products and about spirits in general. Do presentations at whiskey seminars, work at tables where I get to present our spirits.
Nice.
Yeah, and do press.
And your new project is called?
Gardner Liquid Mercantile, which is a small distillery in New Paltz on mm-hmm. Dressel's Farm, and then a branch office, which will be a retail store and a bar and restaurant right on Main Street in Gardner.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we'll be focusing just on local farm distilled, farm brewed, and farm all farm spirits. So farm spirits, farm wine, beer, spirits, and cider.
I got to tell you, the sound effects on this show alone make it worthwhile. And if you want to call, if you don't want to call, fine. I think we're going to have fun anyway, but if you want to call, by all means, 1-800-348-2551. All right, John Fisher, you're already mixing. What are we making here?
One of the first and most important cocktails, the Manhattan cocktail.
Oh, fantastic.
And one of the things I always tell my students is if you're going to hire a bartender, they say that they're a veteran bartender. Just like with a cook, if you are hiring a cook, what do you have them cook? Eggs. You make them cook an omelet or scrambled eggs because that's much harder to make perfectly than you would think. With Manhattan, if they don't reach for a bitters bottle while they're making that Manhattan, that's not a veteran bartender. And even if it is, it's a bad veteran bartender.
Well, it's right on the list of ingredients. If you look it up,
yeah,
I have a terrific app. I forget the name of it, but it's a mixology app, and you can search by booze type or whatever you want. And, you know, bitters, it's always right there on the Manhattan.
And the classic one to use is Angostura aromatic bitters.
Yeah.
And they're one of the best, But you can use other bitters too. What I've used in this one is bitters called Boker's bitters. They were historical bitters from the turn of the previous turn of the century. They've now been recreated. They reverse engineered them. A company in Scotland.
Now, how did they do that? They found an old bottle and they literally took it to the NSA or whatever.
They just did it by tasting.
Okay.
An antique bottle. There's the shortest pour.
Okay. All right. This will be my one and only little taste.
So this is made with Hudson
and I'm on
Manhattan.
For the rest of the show.
You're the taster, yeah, okay. Donahue.
All right.
It smells great.
So this is Hudson Manhattan Rye Whiskey. The Manhattans were originally made with rye whiskey, and Hudson Distillery was the first, Tuthill Town Distillery was the first whiskey distillery in New York State after Prohibition. I think I got that one right.
You got the first whiskey distillery.
Yeah. I've only received tours at the distillery from Gable about 20 or 30 times with my students.
So if I'm right, if you drink this after you've hired or are testing out this bartender and it tastes like this, then you just hire him right away.
Yeah.
Well, you watch him making it. And you see if the bitters go in. But, yeah, it should taste balanced like this. The whiskey has its presence. The vermouth is a very good vermouth called Carpino. They say that it's the first sweet vermouth created in Italy. The Italians, created vermouth first, and the French came after, making a dry vermouth. But sweet vermouth, this is from 1786, and it's called Carpino Antica Formula. It has a nice sort of a vanilla-y richness to it. That and the spiciness of the rye, along with a little bit of an edge from the bitters, and that's why you have a balance of flavors.
Now, it's funny you say this one is with rye. I have heard people make them with bourbon, but as I was taught as a youngster, it's always rye. And my father-in-law, who makes a phenomenal Manhattan, would always use rye.
Rye is correct.
Yeah, well, I think rye was the traditional way. And, you know, back to your analogy with, if you're looking to hire a bartender and he doesn't reach for the bitters, if he reaches for the bourbon without you asking for it, I think it's also similarly going to be an issue for me if I was looking to hire a bartender.
All right, let's take one call here, 1-800-348-2551. And, we're only off to the races now, Joe, so
yes.
Pace yourself, young man. Let's go to Colleen in Rochester. Colleen, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about orange liqueur, Cointreau, triple sec. I really don't understand the relationship between these things and what they're really good for.
Well, they're different. There are a lot of different orange liqueurs. Orange is probably the most popular flavor of liqueurs. Not probably. It is the most popular flavor of liqueurs. Triple sec is a clear and simple liqueur, although the one they make now at Tuthill Town is pretty complex. Originally, triple sec was not the cheap stuff that goes into margaritas. It was much more complex. In fact, it was probably more like Cointreau, if you've ever heard of Cointreau, which is one of the highest quality orange liqueurs. It's not as sweet as some of the others, but it's very particular orange oil characteristic to it. Then there's Grand Marnier, which is orange liqueur mixed with cognac. Any of them used in a cocktail turns that cocktail into what's called a New Orleans sour.
Huh.
So orange liqueur, if you made a whiskey sour with Cointreau instead of simple syrup, you'd have to change the name of it. It wouldn't be a whiskey sour, but it would be a New Orleans-type sour. But they're different qualities. You can almost go by a combination of the price and its proof. The higher the price and the higher the proof, usually the better the liqueur quality is.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Colleen. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. It's Food Friday here on Vox Pop. Today, we talk distilling and cocktails. And John Fisher is here from Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. And Gabriel Irenzo. And the new company, I'm sorry, once again?
Is Gardner Liquid Mercantile.
Gardner Liquid Mercantile. And that is also in?
In Gardner. We're right on Main Street in Gardner.
Oh, there's the card. I'll be darned. And I'm not even drinking. So before we take our first break, John, when you teach classes in this stuff, are kids today just completely out to lunch on this, or is it foreign completely?
These kids today.
Well, culinary students aren't normal. The culinary is not normal. We have some of the most enthusiastic and interested students in probably any college environment I can think of. And they love our industry and they love aspects of it that we are such food and booze nerds over there. The students come into my spirits and mixology class and they just grab it by the reins. The project is writing a cocktail menu and they're serious about it. And I hope they're not doing the research in their dorm rooms.
Gee, I wonder if that happens.
But we do have some really great cocktail bars around here now. You know, if you go to Kingston, Stockade Tavern is as good as any cocktail bar in New York City.
Hey, that's good. That's good to know. Let's take a break here, Zach the engineer. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Windy Hill Farm Nursery, Orchard and Garden Shop, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, offering hardy mums, flowering cabbage and kale, fall blooming perennials, and over 20 varieties of hydrangea. WindyHillFarmInc.com. Hubbard Hall Center for the Arts and Education in Cambridge, New York. New classes in dance, yoga, music, stage combat, puppetry, and more beginning September 9th. HubbardHall.org for registration. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more, harolds.com. Curran Compliance Services, Inc., Greenwich, New York, and now in St. Paul, Minnesota. National compliance and regulatory consultants for the life insurance industry, currancompliance.com. Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York, cafecapriccio.com. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, interimhealthcare.com. Just a little bit of soul.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's Food Friday on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. John Fisher is here and Gabe Lorenzo, as well as our celebrity taster, Joe Donahue. And what fun we are having as we talk distilling and mixing drinks on the program. And before we started, John Fisher came in with some ice, and he said, this is the good stuff. I said, the ice is ice, right? And you said, wrong. Wrong again.
Well, one of the first things I said is that remember that ice is an ingredient in a cocktail. People forget that ice is an ingredient, and it melts into the drink. So if the ice is made from horrible water, it can ruin the cocktail. Now, that said, it's not just the quality of the water in the ice. It's how it's frozen. It's how cold it is, how big it is. Bigger an ice cube, the less surface area. And if we're going to go back to science class, increased surface area increases reaction time. So those little crappy cubes of ice in restaurants melt quickly, and they dilute the drink, and they don't make it as cold. That's why in some great cocktail bars, you'll see humongous, like Godzilla-sized ice cubes, 2-inch ice cubes.
Yeah.
And that will sit in the cocktail for a long time, keep the drink cold, and not melt that much. So the combination of the coldness of the ice, the hardness of the ice, and there's this one company that makes ice 1 1/4-inch cubes that has become the default cube in great cocktail bars, but they are the most unreliable machines, and they break down if you look at it cross-eyed. Luckily, another company in Japan has come along and started making a machine that makes these same kinds of, you know, real cubes. And as Gable said, he thinks that one of the other big American manufacturers is making one now, too.
Yeah, so. I've been looking at ice machines for my new venture.
Yeah.
Manitowoc, I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but Manitowoc out of Missouri, I believe, are starting to make the larger cubes. And you ask what I do as a whiskey ambassador. You travel around to a lot of great cocktail bars, a lot of great whiskey bars.
It must be a tough job, really.
It really was. You know, it's a perfect job for a 25-year-old single guy, not a 35-year-old married guy.
So. Yeah, there you go.
But a lot of them have ice programs.
I mean, they're not adept.
It's amazing to see that you go to these cocktail bars and some of them actually have ice programs where they're getting blocks of ice. People are chipping the ice off, hand chipping, and they're breaking them with their spoons, and depending on what cocktail they're making.
Go ahead.
I went to there's a great cocktail bar that uses modernist methods, you know, all the foams and stuff like that, called The Aviary in Chicago. And it's owned by one of our great graduates, culinary graduates, Grant Ackett's. This bar is amazing. They have an ice guy. They have
really?
A person
just
who's
an
job,
ice person.
He goes in first thing in the morning. He's the first one to get there. He's the last one to leave. They have 35 different shapes and flavors of ice.
Okay.
There's a video on YouTube, Aviary Ice. It's cool.
Wow. Now, we have a famous person in the newsroom. He anchors the morning news here. And he was given rocks in the shapes of ice cubes that apparently are made to go in the freezer.
I hate them.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Really?
What are they made out of? Because I received some that were...
Rock.
No, I received some that were soapstone.
I've seen soapstone, I've seen granite, I've seen stainless steel.
Oh, really?
The problem is that the ice doesn't just make the drink cold. It also dilutes it so that it will taste better. If you take gin out of the freezer and the vermouth out of the refrigerator and you pour them into the glass and taste it, you'll spit it out because it doesn't taste good. The water dilutes the spirit just enough to release the aromatics because the alcohol holds on tightly to the flavors and the aromatics. It needs water to loosen up those chemical bonds. Otherwise, you won't be able to taste it. So when people take like a Booker's or a Baker's bourbon that's 130 proof, and they say, I drink that neat. Well, then you're drinking that stupid because it's not going to taste good. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
That's very frank talk.
It's a
we
controversial
like that.
Program. I never yes. knew. Let's go to Jay in Worthington. Jay.
Hi. This is appropriate what you're talking about because I wanted to talk about the sense of smell. I have a very poor sense of smell. I don't typically drink hard liquor, but I do drink wine. And I had a bottle of an 81 Lopez Heredia Rioja, and what was intoxicating about it was the aroma.
That's what you paid most of the money for. You know, the aromatics of wine, that's what makes it work. You know, the acid is important when you're tasting it and the tannin and stuff. But the smell of the wine is smell is 70% of taste.
So
or flavor,
talking,
I mean.
You were talking about the effect of the ice on the spirits. Does the ice and keeping the spirits cool prevent the alcohol smell from being overwhelming?
When a lot of people ask, you know, how's the right way to drink? What's the right way to drink whiskey? I think any way that you like is the right way to drink whiskey. But the best way to really appreciate the full flavor and aroma is with a little bit of water. You don't want to. I personally don't want to put the ice in it because the cold actually contracts it. So a few drops of water breaks it wide open, and in fact, that will really affect the aroma and the way that you experience the whiskey.
Jay, thanks a lot for the call. And you know, you bring something up that. Even 10 years ago, purists would say, I have a very expensive single malt here. I would never put a drop of water in it. But really, it makes it better if you put a little...
Nimrod.
You're not any less of a man if you add a little bit of water
just
to your
drop
whiskey.
Or yeah. two, you know?
We actually have little droppers at Tuttletown where you just and Hudson Whiskey that are branded. You just add a couple drops of water because you don't want too much.
Right. Okay, well, John's been hard at work. I don't know if you've been able to hear the sound effects, but they're really good. And you're shaking... You shook something with a real... level of skill that I've not seen.
Vigor.
Yeah, vigor.
Shake it like you mean it.
And, you know, it comes down to equipment, too. The standard shakers, I always thought, as long as you get a stainless steel shaker, you're good to go. But you are quite particular about that.
Well, particular in that it needs to work. It doesn't have to be some fancy, expensive shaker. Now, this is what's called a Boston shaker, which most people are used to. It's a combination of the 16-ounce pint glass, where you build the drink, and the metal part. Used together, you can use the glass just for stirring. You can use the metal with the glass for shaking. And using the two of them together, this is the most versatile tool in a bartender's arsenal. You can also, if you're uncomfortable using it, because you've all seen a bartender spend 10 minutes trying to get the shaker apart, with your drink trapped inside.
Yeah, right.
It's really easy once you learn the technique, and I'll show you again later. But you can also use what's called a cobbler shaker. And for anybody who's watching, the cobbler shaker is the kind you've probably seen.
Looks like a top hat.
Right? Yeah, like in the Bond movies.
Yeah, it has a little cap on it, and you build the drink inside, you shake it, and then the top comes off, and it has a built-in strainer.
Sure.
And that's foolproof.
And that's okay?
It's fine.
For the whiskey and drink snob, that's all right?
In fact, in Japanese bartending, which is its own genre, most Japanese bartenders use a cobbler shaker.
I love the Boston shaker, but mostly because it's the largest thing I have at my house. I'm usually making multiple cocktails.
Spoken like a true ambassador. All right, let's go back. What did you make, by the way?
Whiskey sour.
All right, Joe Donahue, celebrity taster.
Oh, my.
Yeah?
Wow.
Like no other whiskey sour you've tasted at any bar, right?
So what do we have in there?
So that's made with the just fresh lemon juice, simple syrup, which is half sugar and half water, and Hudson Baby bourbon whiskey.
Did you make the syrup?
Oh, yeah. It's sugar. In fact,
we were talking about this before the
simple
show.
Simple syrup is simple.
Yes.
It's half sugar, half water. I took the squeeze bottle. I filled it halfway with sugar. I filled it the rest with water, and I shook. That's about as simple as it is.
You don't need to warm it up or anything?
No.
Okay.
I saw a bottle of simple syrup on a shelf in a grocery store for $8.
Okay.
A 12-ounce bottle. And I just...
them, it was also simple.
But that's American...
ingenuity. Yeah.
Ingenuity
that's good,
right there. You make a buck. All right, let's go back to the phones. Tim in Boston Spa. Tim, you're on.
Yes, you've slightly dampened my fire.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Comment on ice. When I'm out, we typically have a Jack Daniel's Manhattan.
Okay.
With a tiny bit of bitters and a tiny bit of vermouth. And it never comes out the way I do it at home because I have ice straight out of the freezer at probably 5 below 0. And it makes quite a difference.
Oh, it makes a huge difference. And the problem is that in many your standard restaurant, village restaurant, they haven't probably gotten into the cocktail thing yet. But ask around and ask if there are restaurants in your area or bars in your area that are known for their cocktail lists, and they are the kinds of places that take them more seriously.
And are you shaking at home or are you stirring?
For Manhattans, I just stir.
Stir. Yep. I mean,
that's right.
That's how I would do it.
But however, if I'm really after a good Manhattan, I don't go out.
Ah. You know, you can always bring your own ice with you. John did that.
have ice will travel.
If you accompany it with dry ice, that might work.
Nice plan. Hey, Tim, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Well, he brings up a point. Now, I like a drink very cold, and when I shake it, it gets very cold. Stirring it doesn't get as cold.
If you have the right ice and you stir it in a glass container, glass is an insulator. It keeps the cold in. You know, you hear some bartenders say, I'll ask a bartender, why are you stirring the drink in the metal shaker? Well, it's colder. No, your hand is colder because metal conducts heat. The glass keeps the drink colder. So if you make the drink in glass, it's going to be a colder cocktail.
All right, so go ahead, Joe.
I was going to just ask, because I know you do this, often this is done with beer, but what about actually chilling the glass?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I told Ray that I brought a beautiful cocktail coupe that fell to an untimely death on Central Avenue on the way in.
It's not the first broken glass on this block, I'll tell you that.
No, we're in this hour, I think.
No.
The cocktail glass of choice now is called a coupe. And you could just go online and Google cocktail coupe. You can probably buy them from Amazon.
As in chicken? C-O-O-P?
Oh, C-O-U-P-E.
Okay.
As
like
in a
Buick coupe.
And it means cup.
All right. So, and maybe this is psychology, and maybe we are just fooling ourselves, but in my house, my wife and I have very nice stainless steel martini glasses that we keep in the freezer. And I swear to you, having had a few in a glass and a few in a... metal martini glass, they stay colder in that metal.
Have you tried icing your glass?
Oh, yes.
Martini glass?
Oh, regular glass glass, if you put ice in it. Well, I don't think you're fooling yourself completely because the glass, that stainless steel glass cup, what do you call it, a stainless?
Yeah.
It is colder at first, and it is keeping the drink colder at first, but it is also giving up or it's absorbing heat more quickly than glass
would. Interesting. But the gin is also in the freezer. Which I know is a no-no for you.
Oh, that's
right?
Not a no-no. It depends on how you're going to use it. For gin and tonic at home, you want that gin to pour out of the bottle like syrup. because it'll stay nice and cold.
Yeah.
All right. You're diluting it with tonic. Remember that dilution of the spirit is what allows the aromatics out. It doesn't matter what form the water comes in. It can be melted ice or it can be in the tonic.
Okay, so theoretically then, even though I am committing a faux pas by shaking it in ice, I'm actually compensating for the frozen gin because a little water is going to get in there.
Yeah, but then you've got a metal glass, so that's like a triple negative.
All right, you know what? You guys are snobs. I'm going back to the phones. Alec in Miller's Falls, you're on.
Hi. Actually, I sympathize with Ray in the with regard to the metal and the versus the glass, because it's really a question of heat capacity of the actual material. You know, when your hand gets colder because you're holding the metal shaker, that's a transmission of heat, not just an absorption of it.
Okay.
But that's not why I called.
Now it's the science forum. All right, thanks.
Do you teach at RPI?
Yeah. All right. No, actually, I was interested in the more formal recipe for a hot buttered rum.
Wow!
And the reason is I make one sometimes in the wintertime, and I use what is actually an old mountain man's recipe that involves a very flavorful rum and some maple syrup or maple sugar, some apple cider, and a chunk of butter.
I make a great buttered rum at my house, but I'm not sure if it's the traditional recipe. I don't think I've ever looked it up, but some butter, some rum, brown sugar, sometimes some maple syrup if that's what I have, and you can also throw a little bit of spice in there.
That's right. I'm sorry, the cinnamon too, yes. Yeah.
Exactly, and you could even add a little bit of milk to that if you want, which is really fantastic.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Really? That is interesting.
Also, nutmeg is like the spice of old-time bartending. In fact, back in the 1700s, 1800s, people actually carried small silver nutmeg graters with a nutmeg inside of it. And that was for grating onto almost any cocktail. And the most popular cocktails back then, very often they were punches.
Yeah.
Right.
And punch just isn't punch without nutmeg in it.
Well, thanks for the call, Alec. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
Enjoy. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Jack in Glenville. Jack.
Hi there.
Hey.
You've touched upon a subject that I have some arguments with my son, who loves his single malt scotch.
No fighting. No fighting about cocktails.
Well, you know, I like to put a little water in it. And
good
said,
man.
Oh, no, you know. So I can now tell him that the experts say that's the best way to bring out the flavor.
But you must enjoy it as best possible. So if he wants ice or water, that's okay.
So you like water, but your son does not, right?
Not butter.
No, water.
Oh, water. I'm sorry.
Yeah. If you want to use butter, I got it.
I'm sorry, yeah.
That's okay. Last call.
Absolutely, yeah. He just likes it. He thinks he just to sip it that way, you know.
In my experience, a drop or two of water really makes it nice.
And I visited distillers down in Kentucky and many distillers in Scotland, and they will always cut it with water.
Huh. Well, there you go.
Even good bourbon, right?
Even good bourbon, yeah.
Yeah. Question. When you mix up a batch of one cocktail, you know, say, you've got a group of people, so you make a whole big batch of Manhattan.
3 or 4 gallons.
Well, yeah. Okay. Now, first of all, you can't shake that, so you stir that, right, as you're adding the ingredients?
This is a really good question, because batching cocktails is done for large events, you know, cocktail tastings and parties.
Yeah.
And you replace the action of shaking it with ice by adding water to it. Between 25% to a third of the final volume of the cocktail should be water. So then you just...
Water?
Yeah, you add the water to the batch, and then you get it ice cold in the refrigerator. Now, we have walk-in refrigerators at work where you put the big bucket in overnight, and that cocktail is cold. And you can either serve it that way as you would a straight-up cocktail, or you can pour it over ice. But you add the water. The added water takes the place of shaking it.
Uh-huh. In the same vein, now, the alcoholic content of the ingredients, the vermouth and the rye, are different. Vermouth is about 35 proof, and the rye is probably about 85, 86, something.
You were closer on the rye. Vermouth is about 19%.
Vermouth is 19% about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, you said percent. I said proof.
Okay, that would be 38 proof then.
Yes, okay. So while that sits there, Is there any separation then of those ingredients, the vermouth and the rye?
No, we got our colloidal substance there. You got everything in suspension in the water. You're fine.
Oh.
Great question.
Okay, it's always bothered me about that.
Well, thanks, Jack.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call. This is via email from our regular correspondent, Bonnie, who asks two questions. One, I've heard you should stir a drink at least 2 minutes to get the full flavor. Is that true?
That's too long.
Too long?
Well, I've also heard something about shaking a true whiskey sour for, what is it, three to 4 minutes? Yeah, there's a lot of...
Here goes the old 239 coming through. Okay, well, the other question is, and I guess we'll have to hold it there and we'll take a break and we'll come back to the second question, which is one I've always had, and we'll be back. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, it's Food Friday. John Fisher, Gable Irenzo, Joe Donahue, Ray Graff, and you will be back.
Support for WAMC comes from the New York State AFL-CIO, wishing WAMC listeners a happy Labor Day, 2.5 million members working towards a brighter future for New York families. Planned Parenthood Mid-Hudson Valley, providing sexual and reproductive health and education services in Dutchess, Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan counties for over 80 years, ppmhv.org. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings, Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. And Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, planning and catering weddings, showers, reunions, and other gatherings indoors or out at the Curtis House with 3 rooms available or at a variety of venues around the area. GloriosaCO.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC Food Friday, and it is a cocktail and distilling edition with John Fisher, Gabe Lorenzo, and Joe Donahue, Ray Graff here. And this is the second part of Bonnie's question, and a question that I think is important. And her question is, how long can you keep vermouth, and should it be kept in refrigeration? Now, we always refrigerate ours, but I'll tell you, you leave it in for 2 months, I don't think it tastes the same. Maybe I'm going crazy.
No, it oxidizes. It's wine. It's wine. How long would you leave a bottle of wine open? Now, it is true that it will last a little bit longer because it is about 5% higher alcohol, 6% higher alcohol. In fact, a funny story about vermouth is that back in the day when Americans didn't have wine at home sitting around, that's what Julia Child told people to make sauces with, because you could buy a bottle of vermouth and it would last for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I'd say a couple of weeks, room temperature, maybe another week or two refrigerated, but not much longer.
Yeah.
It goes oxidized. And if it's brown, instead of clear like a Sauvignon Blanc or Pinot Grigio color, it's shot.
Ah. And I think, in my experience, a bad vermouth makes for a bad martini, even if you put a drop in.
Ingredients. It's all about the ingredient. One bad ingredient will ruin the whole cocktail.
And speaking of ingredients, the gin and tonic that we just tried, really amazing stuff. So tell us about that.
Well, it just shows that quality ingredients obviously do make a big difference. And you don't have to do all the crazy work yourself, because there's a number of really good cocktail mixes available now. Now, cocktail mix has a bad reputation, a bad history in bartending. It was the stuff that used to come out of the corrugated metal hose.
Yeah.
And it had all kinds of horrible stuff in it. But there are some real craft-oriented companies now. What's the one that you carry at the distillery?
Sorry, it's been a little while since I've been in the shop. Jack Rudy.
Jack Rudy is a good company.
They're out of South Carolina as well.
And then there's this one, Bitter Milk, made by, I'm giving him a bit of a plug, but a former student, Joe Rea, and his wife have a great cocktail bar in Charleston, South Carolina called the Gin Joint. And a couple of years ago, they started this bitter milk company and plays off of buttermilk being a southern ingredient. And every one of their mixes has a bittering agent. This one is charred grapefruit peels.
Mm.
And this has nothing but great stuff in it. It's got lime juice, lemon juice, cane sugar. They burn sugar, cinchona bark, which is one of the bittering agents in tonic water. And you just mix it with gin and soda water, and it makes this, I think everybody at the table can attest to, being a pretty tasty and a slightly unusual gin and tonic because it has more ingredients than usual.
And I think you can taste the salt. There's sea salt in this, too,
yeah.
Right? And I think you can get that edge. Now, you also used this very interesting gin, and it's not something that you might make a London dry martini with.
No.
But this drink is perfect.
Now, gin is fascinating stuff. It's one of the favorite spirits of bartenders. Kind of ironically, it's one of the lower selling spirits in the country, even though everybody talks about it. But this is now. Did you pioneer this with Joel?
Yeah, Joel was the one who came up with this. Joel Elder was a former chief distiller at Tuttletown, and he came up with this recipe. This is actually a blend of our two vodkas. So we've got the Tuttletown fresh pressed apple vodka, which is distilled from fresh pressed local apples.
Ah.
We also make a vodka from wheat, which is Finger Lakes wheat. Take those two vodkas at a very high proof, put them together, then add the botanicals and redistill it.
Huh.
And what comes out is this really unique, what we would call a New World dry style gin. We're using a variety of different citruses in here. There's actually almonds in the pre-distillation of this, and that almond.
Green almonds or regular almonds?
No, they're regular almonds.
Okay.
Regular almonds. And that's more for the mouthfeel. It gives it a really sort of fatty quality to it, which is nice. And mouthfeel is a big part of spirits.
Let's go back to the phones. Andrew in Kingston. Andrew, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi, yeah. There's a bitter company that I like out of Hudson called the Hudson Standard, and they make a product called Shrub. Could you tell me what that is and how it would be used in a cocktail?
Well, Shrub is a kind of a sweetening and souring agent. It's a really old school ingredient used in cocktails. More often than not, it's made with a vinegar as the sour. And one of my colleague at the culinary, Doug Miller, made a shrub with crown maple syrup and some homemade malt vinegar. And we made a cocktail with it using Dutch's sugar wash moonshine for a bunch of bartenders from New York City who came up and thought they were coming to, you know, Rubeville, and ended up getting this fantastic cocktail at a great cooking school. So shrubs are used in instead of lemon juice or lime juice, basically. And you can make different kinds of shrubs. You can make them with herbs. You can make them with all kinds of different ingredients. But essentially, it's a little bit of in cooking, we call it a gastrique. It's a little sweet and a little sour.
So you could use those for cooking as well?
Sure. I would taste it and see what it would do to the flavor of a sauce or a dish. And before I poured it in there for everybody at the table.
Sure.
All right, Andrew, thanks a lot. Let's go over to Mary in Rotterdam. Hi, Mary, you're on.
Hey, I have a question about Moscow mules.
Okay.
Why do they serve them in a copper mug? Does that do for the flavor of the drink?
I don't think there's anything it does for the flavor of the drink. The Moscow mule is a cool drink.
All right,
very
easy.
It's vodka, ginger beer, ice, and lime.
Wow.
And it started in California. There was a Hublin salesman who had just a buttload of Smirnoff.
Nice. And thanks for that. John Fisher of the Culinary Institute. Thank you very much.
A little too much time.
He had a backload.
That's better.
Vodka and was trying to sell it. Then he had a customer who was a... in addition to having a bar and inn, also had an interest in a British ginger beer company. So they both had extra of their ingredients. I personally have no idea where the heck the copper mugs came from.
So it's a gimmick?
No, but it was originally served in that copper mug, and it became a huge hit. They took pictures, because Hubline had money behind it, they took pictures of celebrities drinking these Moscow Mules at pool parties. It became the cocktail because movie stars were drinking them, and it swept back from California back to Connecticut, where Hubline was headquartered.
Huh, there you go.
My guess is if it was a stainless steel mug, it would probably taste exactly the same.
Thanks, Mary. Bye now. Over to Connie and Troy. Hello, Connie.
Hi, I'm here.
You're on.
I have a suggestion regarding the hot buttered rum, and that is to use cane syrup, not any other kind of sweetener. The cane syrup is a derivative of sugar cane. Rum's a derivative of sugar cane, I think. And cane syrup has a really nice bite to it. It's what we used to have in our Coca-Cola, but then they switched over to corn syrup.
May I ask you if it's clear or if it has color to it?
Oh, it's dark. It's really dark. I mean, real cane syrup. And, you know, don't buy this stuff in the grocery store. You have to go to the store. And that's hard to find. But my father, who's 89, loves it. And, I turn myself inside out to find cane syrup for him. And I remember as a young child watching the mules go round and round and round the syrup pan, squeezing the sugar cane into that big pan, and they just blend it down to, thick,
Well, the cane syrup is pre-processing, so you end up with some of that molasses in there and that dark sugar. So if you're using a brown sugar or anything, I can see why that would taste delicious.
All right. Connie, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it very much. A number to call is 1-800-348-2551. This is from our buddy Jimmy Vielkind, and he wants to get back to the vermouth question. You said, John, that when the vermouth turns brown, it's bad for sure.
If it's dry vermouth.
Okay, that was his question, because he likes a Manhattan, and he said he uses the sweet vermouth.
Oh, no, sweet vermouth starts out brown.
Yeah.
In fact, we should come up with this, because sweet vermouth is not red. It's not red vermouth. It's brown because it's colored and sweetened with caramel,
right.
Caramel coloring.
Mm-hmm.
So, dry vermouth should be clear, like, or look like white wine. Sweet vermouth should be brown.
And how can you tell when it's bad, then? Tasting it.
You have to taste it. If it smells tired.
Yeah.
And sometimes a little bit older isn't necessarily bad, because it definitely changes. The oxidation changes. And there's a story, there's a big movement of barrel-aging cocktails right now, and that sort of stems from a man named Tony Conigliaro in London. Who found
baseball
an old
player, ball. Right? Boston Red Sox?
No. I don't know. I'm a cocktail fan, not a baseball fan. But he found a bottle in his basement, and I forget what it was, but it was a type of vermouth, and it had been sitting there for 30 years.
Right.
And he tasted that next to a new one, and they were completely different. Now, that bottle wasn't open, but it definitely affected it. So the oxidation might not be a bad thing. A little too long, obviously, it's going to go bad and sour, but you might find a sweet spot where it tastes different from when you opened it, and you like it even better, and catch it before it goes to a vinegar.
Does anybody still drink a sweet vermouth on the rocks? I watched an old 70s movie. It was a Bond movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was Diamonds Are Forever, and Jill St. John gives Bond a nice martini and Rossi on the rocks.
Yeah, it's consumed that way in Europe a lot. I mean, you go to Europe, you see Martini and Rossi umbrellas everywhere, and you see Cinzano umbrellas. That's not because they're not selling it. That's because they have enough money to pay for the umbrellas everywhere.
Yeah.
People do drink that. And if you think about it, sweet vermouth is like a cocktail in a bottle. It's wine. It's slightly sweetened. It's got spices. You pour it over ice with a twist of lemon. It's complete.
My wife loves Lillet. Lillet is a really
is
nice, there are a variety of different types of Lillet, and she loves the rosé Lillet with a little bit of ice, and it's a kind of a ladies who lunch kind of thing. It's a really nice sort of aperitif.
Well, fair enough. Believe it or not, John's shaking a drink. Let's go back to the phones. Ray, can you hear us in Westfield?
Hard to believe.
Yes, I can.
You're on.
Well, I have a main question. But I was thrown a detour when you said ginger beer.
Okay.
In a nutshell, what is ginger beer? I love ginger.
Oh, it's delicious.
It's stronger ginger ale. It's spicier, has a little bit more of a bite to it, and it's great stuff. Yeah, I love it for cocktails.
So it has real ginger in it.
Well, so does ginger ale. So does ginger ale, or it should. But it's just a stronger, spicier.
It'll almost make you sneeze when you open the bottle.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, say it again?
Yes, it's probably just ginger sugar and carbonated water, but, you know, that's probably the simplest way to make it, which might not be the way that the big companies make it.
But you should look. If you go to the store,
you
find...
buy it off the shelf at
If you find a nice market, a nice higher-end market, you can find a variety of different ginger beers. Just look at the ingredients. You find one with a handful of five ingredients, and you'll find a really nice one.
And beverage centers often will have several, so good luck with that, sir. Thank you. Let's go over to John in Clifton Park. John.
Hi, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
I'm really enjoying it. I hope you can hear me pretty well. I'm
sure thing.
Driving in my car hands-free here.
Yeah.
The question that I have for you...
Put your hands on the steering wheel.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
A friend asked me once, or actually told me once, that if I wanted to turn my low-end alcohol into higher-end alcohol, I could filter it through a Brita filter. Is that true?
Really?
Well, the Brita, I think the filter in Brita is carbon, and that's pretty much what vodka is filtered through, and a lot of other whiskeys, or a lot of other spirits, including whiskey. If you Tennessee whiskey, for instance, is filtered through feet, I think, I don't know, do you know how many feet?
Maple charcoal, about 8 feet.
Feet of maple char coal, which is carbon. So, yeah, I would imagine that it will take out impurities. Most vodkas that you find on the shelf are going to be distilled up to a very high proof, and there's very little difference between a really cheap vodka and a really great vodka. The difference is typically marketing and packaging. But if you find something that's a little sharp and it's really cheap and you want to put it through a Brita filter, I would imagine that it might smooth it out a little bit.
You know, I've never even thought of that.
In fact, my colleague at Culinary, Doug Miller, takes the cheapest Crystal Palace vodka and filters it through his homemade charcoal filter and does an A-B test with the students. They all think that the second one, that the filtered one, is Grey Goose or something expensive. So, yeah, it does work.
Amazing. All right, let's go quickly to George in Greenwich, New York. George.
Great show.
Thanks.
When you were giving the ingredients to your whiskey sour, I noticed you didn't say anything about the froth on top and how you get it. Now, I know a lot of bartenders would use a commercial product called Frothy. I prefer to use an egg white for the froth on top of a whiskey sour.
Now,
what do you say?
Gable's giving me the Malocchio now because he brought eggs so I could use a half an egg white in the whiskey sour. That's exactly the way you get the froth and body.
And why didn't you use that egg white, John? I'm not quite sure.
Because I'm lame.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I love an egg white whiskey sour is my favorite cocktail. And the key to that is shaking that egg white first. You want to shake it dry in your shaker and get it nice and frothy before you put any the other ingredients in. And then it's the same recipe as we're talking about. So 2 ounces of whiskey, an ounce of simple syrup, an ounce of fresh squeezed lemon. But make sure that is really frothy first. You throw in all the ingredients, then top it with ice, and then shake it extremely vigorously for a while until it's almost like a milkshake, and you strain it out, and that's in my book a true whiskey sour. But trust me, the one that John made was still fantastic.
George, thanks a lot. I guess we're almost out of time. I'll tell you what, Terry in Bennington, you got about 20 seconds.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Thank you. Would you just comment on the two liqueurs, rum chata and frangelico?
Well, rum chata I don't know at all, so we'll get that out of the way.
Okay.
Frangelico is a lovely hazelnut-based liqueur with also some flower and berry essences, and it's almost 500 years old. So it's really high quality and quite good.
And Frangelico with just a little bit of fresh-squeezed lime, that's all you need. It's fantastic.
Mm. All right, so we're out of time here. Thanks to everybody who called in. Quickly, the final drink that you made, John, what is this?
Completely invented. Showing that if you use the proper ratios, you can make a cocktail that'll taste good, kind of like with food recipes. This is a delicious nectarine from Montgomery Place Orchards that I just muddled in the bottom of a glass with some...
I muddled.
With some Pierre Ferrand dry curacao, fresh lemon juice, and a spirit that Gable just took off of his still this morning.
It was a couple days ago, but it's a... fresh pressed cider that was fermented, distilled, and the vapor was passed through hops and strawberries.
Well, I got to say, we are out of time. We have probably enough material for about four more shows. I want to thank John Fisher today, and I want to thank Gable Irenzo for being here as well, and Joe Donahue, thanks for tasting. You really worked hard today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Support comes from Carrie Haddad Gallery, Hudson, New York, presenting Paper, a mixed-media exhibit exploring paper and its possibilities now through October 4th. Open daily 11 to 5, carriehaddadgallery.com. Maddie's TV and Appliances, family-owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete, available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores, maddiesoliveoil.com. SPAC, presenting the Saratoga Wine and Food Festival in Concord d'Elegance, September 11th through 13th, featuring chefs Josh Capon, Ellie Krieger, Rick Orlando, and sommelier Josh Wesson, SPAC.org, and the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preserveNYS.org. Thanks again to our guests. Thank you for calling. Thanks to Zach at the controls. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.